Anyone familiar with the website Bad Hebrew Tattoos? The website Bad Hebrew Tattoos? Oh, it's an excellent website. I don't know if it still exists, but they used to catalog bad Hebrew tattoos. The worst that I remember on the website was someone who had a long line down their spine that said, "Thank you for using Morphix translation software." So I took surfing lessons the summer before our wedding, and I don't remember if it was right away. One of the instructors over the weekend had gotten a big tattoo, like, you know, like 3-inch letters, 2-inch letters, and it said Baal Tzema. And the tzadi was, it was a final tzadi. You know how there are positions? I think everyone in the room knows that there are positions for Hebrew letters. But it was, the tzadi was at the front of the word. And I thought, that looks really strange. Baal Tzema, like Baal is a master of, or like don't, I guess Baal with an ayin. So I was like, don't tzema. And I was like, what's a tzema? Somewhere in the middle of the day, I said to the kid, I said, what does your tattoo mean? It means courage. And I realized he had it backwards because it should say ometz lev, you know, which is like a sort of a modern interpretation of ometz is really courage as far as I understand, but ometz lev is like courage of the heart, be resolute, which more or less comes from this week's parsha. One of the charges that Moses gives to Joshua is to be strong, chazak v'emetz, be strong and resolute. Fear not, nor be dismayed. So I like that, you know, the question of how the parshiot aligned with the Shabbatot is interesting, and what it means to read from the Torah from a weekly parsha, the week between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur especially, when it's this was one of the few Shabbatot that rabbis used to preach. It was this Shabbat and Shabbat HaGadol, the Shabbat before Passover, because they used to preach on how to prepare for Passover. So this week, rabbis would preach on how to prepare for Yom Kippur. And so there's a lot of thought that was given to how the parshiot align to this week. It's a process more or less called smichut parshiot, like the alignment of the parshiot to experience. And I think some piece of that suggests to me all the anxiety we feel this time of year. You know, which of us sitting in these pews will be here next year? My dad gets really morose about that. I know a few people get really morose or morbid thinking about, you know, is this my last time? Am I going to see Dave next year at this time? So I think that message of courage is a piece of the season. You know, that there is a great unknown facing us in the coming year. Frankly, in the coming moments, there's a great unknown. We have no real control over the events of our life. We only have control over the ways in which we react and act in those moments. And certainly life and death, with very few exceptions, are not in our orbit of control. There was a death in the community not that long ago where the person dying was conscious and alert almost to the end. I found that to be a fascinating and terrifying experience. To be fully awake and alert up until moments before death, and to be aware that death was imminent. And this parsha talks about life and death are yours, that there's a certain amount of our actions affect our lives, and that we have choices, as elsewhere in the Torah, about how to manage our lives and whether to choose life or death. But the simple fact is I don't think that's accurate. And I think a great spiritual project of a human life is making sense of the ultimate limits of our control and how so fewer things than we think or wish are actually in our control. The way our children behave, the way our cells reproduce or don't correctly, what could happen to us on the road. Sometimes things as easy as, you know, what dreams we have and how we wake up feeling. The circumference of our control is much smaller than we think. And not to be fatalist, I think that's a spiritual mistake, to say, oh, everything's up to God and I'll just wait and see what happens. But to recognize, and I'll be talking about this more on Yom Kippur, that God's domain is great and we have a role to play, but we are a piece of a microcosm. We are a piece of a, biome, a piece of an ecosystem is the word I was looking for. And then we don't manage the ecosystem. We are very small players, and we have places and spaces we control, but they are not the vast majority of it. So the Midrash, there's a whole compendia of Midrash that are aligned per parsha, and I'm not a scholar enough to understand how they put, in the ancient days, how they put one Midrash to one parsha, because there's no obvious links, but I'm going to share with you a Midrash, a rabbinic story that originates or that is connected or canonized to this week's parsha of Vayelech. So the rabbi said that Shimon ben Halafta went to a bris, a circumcision ceremony, and the father of the child made a feast and gave those present aged wine, very lovely wine, and said, I'm going to put some of this wine away for his wedding. Ready if you raise your eyes? Sounds like a bad idea? Right. That's like super, you guys know Ayin Hara, like the evil eye? Like I had uncles. Does anyone have uncles who wouldn't tell you how many brothers they had? I had an uncle who wouldn't say how many brothers he had, and I know of people who won't talk about how many grandchildren they have. It's bad luck to brag about one's prosperity or to plan too far in the future and get too excited. Really, and the Muslims say inshallah for the same reasons. That's a great question. Because I'm not even sure it's a Sephardic tradition. It's definitely Sephardic and Ashkenaz. It really feels like the product of a people in anxiety, right? Like a people who have a very anxious position in society to be very conscientious of not complimenting. You shouldn't, I know I've said it. I have to explain it to congregants. What an ugly baby you have. You're supposed to say you never brag about a baby. I hate it when, and I guess I don't say this as much as have super anxiety when people tell me my kids are cute. I was like, please don't, there's still a piece of me that is very wary of that kind of celebration. Believe me, I've had a lot of therapy about it. So, but this is like is it written somewhere? It's going to be written here, sort of. Yeah, you're going to hear it here. I doubt this is the first story of such an experience, but it's a famous story. There's another famous one about a guy trying to evade the angel of death, but that's not exactly here. So the feast goes on till midnight, and Rabbi Shimon ben Halafta, he says it trusted in his own strength. I mean, I think he wasn't he wasn't too drunk. He could walk home. So he left at midnight, and he went back to where he left. And on the road, he meets the angel of death, like you always do on the road. And Rabbi Shimon says, you look strange. You look like you got something on your mind, angel of death. He says, who are you? And he says, well, I guess he doesn't recognize him as the angel of death right away, but he thinks it's weird. This guy looks weird. He says, I'm God's messenger. And he says to him, why do you have a strange expression on your face? And I kind of get that it's this wry look on his face, almost a half smile is the image I get. And because the angel of death says, on account of the talk of human beings who say this and that we will do, and not yet in one of them knows when he will be summoned to die. There's also a great story of David about that.